right here is for the people.
So the Muay Thai heavyweights, Team Chu, are back in the studios for Podcast 27. I'm quite excited about the last podcast that we did with best-selling author on mindfulness, Danny Penman. He wrote a fantastic book called Mindfulness, A Practical Guide to Finding Peace in a Frantic World. And this has not only been a great read, but it's actually helping people to overcome depression. Depression, if you don't know, affects 1 in 10 people, and it's actually quite a serious biological disease. So if you want to find out more about that, check out Podcast 26. All the links are there. So it's been a while since we last had Team Chu on the podcast. We have a new set of listeners, and those of you that missed the last episode, the Renaissance podcast hits really took off after that podcast. And I thought I'd begin this podcast with a bit of a summary as to who Team Chu are, the short but explosive ride that they've all been on and that they've shared for the past 5 years since the team formed. So Philip Chu, the head coach, experienced in all sorts of martial arts from a young age, including Taekwondo, took up kickboxing seriously from about 2003. Would that be right, Phil?
Yeah.
You introduced your younger brothers, cousins and friends to Muay Thai under the family name Team Chu, and ever since you've produced a great atmosphere for Muay Thai. But also you're producing champions and top-ranked fighters. Just this year, you were presented with a Lifetime Achievement Award for your coaching contribution. And the shows that you're putting on are getting bigger and better. So joining us too are your younger brothers, Matthew and Dave. We've got Richard, Hui, Eddie, Joel and Q. I'm going to be putting up the pictures underneath the podcast so the listeners can get an idea of, you know, they can put a voice to the face. There's a lot to talk about, so I'll begin firstly by congratulating Richard Lee on his latest victory at the Nak Muay event.
Thank you.
I know there's been a lot of expectation on you, Richard, and this last victory certainly must have been quite special for you.
Yeah, it definitely meant a lot. I've been out for a while as well, since it's been the last fight, was November.
Been quite down lately as well.
Well, so why don't you just walk us through the fight then? People that don't know you, Richard, and that never saw the fight, why don't you explain a bit about how the day went?
I took it pretty relaxed. Turned up to the venue, did the medicals just as usual. That's when you wait around, that's when the nerves kind of kick in. But close to the fight, warmed up and Phil took me on the pads, drew out some techniques, and from there, that's when the nerves, I think, disappeared. Didn't feel any nerves after that.
Who were you fighting?
What was his name? Do you remember?
Dynamo.
Stars Gym.
He's one of the instructors from Stars Gym.
From Battersea,
yeah.
Six fights, yeah. Yeah, so talk us through the first round then.
First round was a bit shaky. I felt quite rusty. I think a little bit of the game plan went out the window a bit.
Oh, first round. Kicked your balls twice as well.
Oh, yeah, I see. Kicked my balls twice.
Started the whole match up if I got kicked in the balls.
Yeah, I got pretty pissed off about that. And then that was pretty much the first round for me, really.
Pressure fight, ain't it?
Pressure fight. I came forward a lot.
You pressured Richard.
Yeah.
Did you hang up for that fight?
No.
Richard stuck to the game plan.
Yeah, because round 2-3 stuck to the game plan.
Quite
we moved
taller
around.
Than you,
he seemed about the same height, I think. Maybe
no, the same height.
Same height.
Exact same height.
I thought.
Same height. That's the first thing I looked at. First thing I looked at is height. Because when the fighters come out, what I do is I always assess, you know, what kind of fight. So if they're taller, we're going to have a different game plan. If they're shorter, it'll be a different game plan. So the first thing I look at is the height, and then what stance are they, southpaw or orthodox? Mm-hmm. And then we go from there in the first round.
Rich, you're quite a big part of the Team Chu family. I guess what did this fight mean to you? You know, what's the pressure like for representing a team like this at this high level?
I try not to let too much of the pressure get to me. Just think about what I'm doing at that moment, and at the moment, just had somebody in front of me, try and put the best performance in they can. Listen to the corner as much as I can. Sometimes
it's always an honour.
I think it was
the first time you looked nervous though when I warmed you up.
Yeah, I did feel nervous,
but when it was just me and you, I think you looked nervous.
Yeah.
I think he's been out for a long time as well.
Yeah, been out since November.
And the last few fights have been lost, so you needed a win.
Normally you're
that
nervous.
You want to say that?
What?
You really needed a win as well.
What do you mean?
Like, for your podcast that you really needed a win.
He does, doesn't it?
Yeah, you need to.
You need to get a win back.
Yeah,
you need to get a win back. It's important.
Because the thing is, even the most professional fighters will have a loss, but it's
all about winning, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's your record?
I don't remember now. I think I've had about 11 fights. I think maybe 4 losses.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about right.
So
even after one loss, is big pressure. So
it's like doubling the stakes up, isn't it? It's like...
And I think maybe as being a coach as well, you want to, and you've got students as well, if you're teaching them techniques and at least you're winning fights, it has a lot more credibility.
Definitely, yeah.
Because you're quite serious into your coaching as well.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Yeah, good at the moment. A few classes across Gymbox. We shuffled a few classes around now, so gonna be at home and teaching beginners.
No, you're teaching
I've had the kids class on Thursdays for a while now, so that's good. Enjoying that.
The last fight that you had, what was it for?
It wasn't for a belt or anything, it was just a normal belt.
Okay.
Standard belt, yeah.
So then what are your next kind of goals?
The next, Phil's next show, the MTC,
mm-hmm.
in October the 19th.
Yeah, so we might as well plug that now then. Yeah, so what's going down then on the 19th?
It's probably going to be one of our biggest lineups so far. We've got 9 to 10 A-class super belts. Headlining the shows, we've got Matty defending his world title. Jeez. We've got Carlton fighting Carl Heller, who's on a 6 win streak.
Win streak,
that's it. Cheers, Joel.
we've
got Hui defending his English title against...
Hui, a.k.a. Michael Pham.
Yeah,
AKA
someone from Star Gym. He's never lost before. We've got Shrek fighting Carlos de Grasser.
Mm-hmm.
Very strong fighter. He beat one of our guys, David Saar.
Oh, shit.
And he stopped David Saar.
Who's fighting a sick fight?
From the main event. He's from Sandy Holt's gym. Shrek's fighting him.
Sick.
And we got Marcus Crompton fighting Paul Barber. Paul Barber's... beating one of our guys as well, Tai Huan, in the last matchup, and that he's probably up and coming in the UK, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's on a 10 win streak.
Wow.
10 in a row, he hasn't lost yet.
Mm.
But he's fighting Marcus Crompton, who's just recently moved to another gym, Liam's gym, they call it Petchen D. He used to fight at 67 kg, but he's fighting at 61 kg now, and he's much stronger at that weight. And his last performance, he beat Femi from Diablo. And we got Chrissy Brenton. She's number one in the UK. She's going to be fighting against French number one UK.
Chrissy Brereton.
Cheers, Joelle. Chrissy Brereton. But yeah, she just recently beat Alexis Rufus, who's a really, really strong fighter as well. And who else we got?
Ryan.
Joel. We've got Ryan Lee. Ryan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He's going to be fighting his first A-class.
Shit.
Against Sam. Sam, what's his surname, Joel?
Which one? Sam.
Sam Goff, is it?
Sam Goff, yeah.
Sam Goff, isn't it? From,
Sam Goff.
Yeah. He's from Shin Kicks. He's a very good Thai style fight, so he's got a similar style to Ryan, so it should be interesting. And his record is 9-2, and Ryan's record is 10-1, so they've got a similar record.
Quite an even matchup, then.
Very even matchup.
Yeah, so speak more about that. So who chooses the fights and who matches the fighters up?
I'm the matchmaker, so I choose the fight and I try and choose it based on the style, the experience, you know, and something that I'll think what the crowd will want, mm-hmm. you know, or what the fans will want to create that good atmosphere and exciting.
Styles make fights.
Yeah, styles make fights, exactly. Mm-hmm. Who else we got?
Jose.
Oh yeah, we've got Jose Villera. Yeah, he's going to be fighting international, who's defending his European title. So Jose is going to go for a European title.
And where can the listeners go to find out more about this event, get tickets and stuff?
They can go to our website, Team Chew. They can go to our fan page, Team Chew fan page, or add us on their Super MTC fan page. Yeah. And then you get all the latest updates on MGC.
Facebook page.
Same thing, isn't it? Fan page on Facebook, isn't it?
Because fan page can be easy.
True.
Listen, right.
Isn't it?
Well, true. Good point,
Joe. Well, I remember that time when we were sitting down having dinner. It might have been at Hong Kong Diner at 3 a.m. or something. But you were speaking about a new show that you wanted to introduce, and you were throwing a few names past us for ideas, and MTC was one of them, and it's quite funny, like, remembering that time about discussing what the name that you want from it,
yeah,
to where we are now, where you've actually, you know, developed MTC as a different brand to your Team Chew brand, where it's you know, a recognized show for elite Muay Thai fighters.
Yeah, it all started with we started off with like a white collar interclub sort of stroke exhibition matches, which started from doing fights with novices, mm-hmm. and we called it Fight Night or something. And then our first show was actually Ministry of Sounds. Mm-hmm. And
that was quite a good turnout.
Yeah, it was for the first event. It was a good turnout, and I thought, whoa, this could be good. Mm-hmm. You know, this could be something. You know, this is the start of something. And then I thought, okay. And then that's when Team Chew just began, so we didn't really have a team yet. This was maybe 5 years ago, four years ago, I think it was.
Wasn't it just you, Matty and Dave, Team Chew?
Michael?
Michael was my first student. This is when I made him do the splits and stuff.
Liam.
my living room. No, but yeah, actually, Michael was I've always wanted to teach, and then growing up, Michael was
He was interested.
Yeah, he said he was the guinea pig. I said, Piper, you want to learn? He's like, yeah, shut up. Yeah.
I'm forced to do it, really.
Yeah, but yeah, it began from there, and then it moved on to, we did I changed the name. I called it Showdown.
Super Showdown
or something. But not realising there was already a Showdown. There's other promoters using that name. Yeah. And I thought, oh shit, I need to change the name. And then that's when Super MTC came about, Super Muay Thai Championships. And that's when it just clicked. So, yeah, it's good.
Well, the last MTC show was a great one. It was a genuine crowd pleaser. There were some amazing fights. And in fact, Michael, you kind of stole the show at the end.
The Big Bad Wolf.
Yeah. You stole the show with a victory that had one of the loudest kind of applauses and eruptions at the end when the guy was knocked out. It was for the English title,
yeah.
That one, and it certainly you certainly impressed on the night. So you and I, we kind of went through this on the day when we did the post fight interview. But I guess, can you describe a bit about your feelings leading up to the fight and talk us through the fight itself?
Yeah, just training is for like 7 weeks, 6 weeks for a fight. It's mentally tough, emotionally tough. Yeah, just kind of, it's hard fight training because something you really want to win and being in there every day, and then sometimes your coach shouting at you, saying, why can't you get it right? You know, it's emotional because you're like, oh, because you love it so much.
Mm-hmm. Emotionally draining.
Yeah, it's draining. Yeah, Joe, you know about today, you almost cried as well. Joe's got Interclub next week, it's his first Interclub, and then, yeah, it's just when it gets closer to the time, it's hard work. Everything.
The pressure.
Yeah, pressure. It's a lot. But you just want to do well as well. Like, you're there every day in the gym. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work.
Like the way we train people as well is like we have a group of set of pro fighters, and then we've got a set of guys who come in to get fit, mm-hmm. or we get guys who just want to have one or two inter clubs. So we train them differently. The way we train our pro fighters is a bit more strict, you know, we want to get it right, we want to be the best, we want to be the best team, we want to be on top.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, Joel, now that you're here, how does it feel when you're training with friends but also fighters that are, you know, highly ranked in the Muay Thai world?
Honestly, I'm eternally grateful that I'm able to train with Team Teal, which happens to be UK's best. I have trained in almost 6 gyms in my life, all over the world, Malaysia, Singapore, London. And up to now, I've never had such a coach or team that has inspired me as much as Team Teal and taught me as much as well.
For example?
From the moment I've started training here, I've increased exponentially. My techniques have been sharpened and honed. And right next week, I'll be doing my first interclub. And as Michael was saying, the only thing I'm worried about is my performance, not about the win or loss, or even about my own embarrassment. In fact, I'm just worried about embarrassing Team Two of the high standard I have to live up to as well.
Yeah.
Even today, I injured myself and a little bit, but because of that, I was so emotionally exhausting, I thought I was going to cry right then.
Well, it's funny, when a lot of people lose, the first thing they say is they say sorry to everyone.
Yeah, they feel like you let everyone down.
Yeah, you feel that.
Like the team, it's like a
exactly.
team thing. But really, you haven't, I think. But it's just a learning curve.
No one ever thinks you do apart from that person. They say, I'm sorry, but no one, you know, no one ever really feels that they should be saying sorry.
The main thing is you try your best, you win or lose or whatever. The main thing you want to see is they put the best they can in their training. They put everything they can in. The hard work, the diet, the strength and conditioning, you know. If they put 100% into that, then you can't ask for more, really.
Yeah. Make sure you do your homework. Because on the day when you got your test, you're thinking, did I do everything right?
That's true.
Because I'm in the, when I'm warming up sometimes, and I think, did I do everything right? Did I cover everything? Sometimes I think I could have trained harder. Mm-hmm.
That's due to confidence as well. The harder you train, the more confident you would be.
Yeah.
So you believe in your techniques more, but if you back of your mind you missed a bit of sessions here, or you didn't put the diet in 100%, or you missed a few runs, you can in the back of your mind you think, oh, I didn't put
100%. Stop questioning yourself.
You question yourself, because in the ring you always doubt yourself. Even times when I thought, I'd be like, what am I doing in here? You know, and then you just pass it. You just back of your mind. There's always someone saying, you know, negative thoughts, and then there's the confidence thoughts as well.
Yeah. So the English title then. Go through the final round then.
Well, I still sort of just feeling him out, just still warming up into it. You know, it was the early rounds. It only lasted up to round 3, and then he's done a spinning elbow, and I just threw a right overhand and he got the back of his head.
Yeah.
And then it was just over from there. Couldn't continue.
And I think because you're so well known within the team, and the fact that it was, you know, the last fight, it was the big event of the night. It kind of brought the house down, didn't it?
I took Matthew Chu's place because he was supposed to be the main event.
Yeah.
So because his guy couldn't make weight, he was at 4 kilos heavier.
5.5.
Or 5.5 for a world title. You know, that's not serious. I think he come to a weigh in 5.5.
All the way from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he didn't want to lose 1 kilo. We said lose 1 or 2 kg. He said no.
Mm.
He goes, I'm sick.
Actually, we gave him a chance. We said you can come back and weigh in later, and he said yeah, fine. And then next thing you know, someone saw me getting a hot dog.
And then when Phil came in, he was saying, I'm sick, so I've got to eat
this. David Patinoki, the one that's fighting again.
No, it's not him.
He blamed it on hay fever.
Hay fever?
So are any of you your fights up online?
Probably like 1 or 2, but they're like from the beginning, about 2011.
There's an interclub one, isn't it? They're spinning back.
Yeah, interclub.
There's one of you and Phil as well.
Yeah, there's not much on YouTube with us because we don't like to give it away.
So I guess, so what are your thoughts on putting your videos up online?
Because there's one of Richard's well, an entrance dancing. Check that one out. Type in Richard Lee.
I think we should
put videos online.
of the fights.
Well, the two arguments is that if you put it up, people see your technique. But on the same hand, people then don't know who you are. And
yeah, but like I said, I think even if you know someone, for me, even when when I watch people fight, who I'm going to fight, it don't make a difference for me anyway.
It does make a difference as a coach, because as a coach, you can see their weaknesses, their strength points, you know, what style they have, and then you can then we can go back on the gym floor and say, okay, guys, need to work on this because he does that.
No, but doesn't everyone come to a different fight with different technique, a different strategy? Like,
how
not
about,
really.
How about the
like
fighters you said, who have their fights on the internet? They still be
there. Yeah, if you're going to have it, it's, you can't do nothing about it, but if you can avoid it, it'd be better, but, you know, because let's say no one's seen your fight and then... they come in, they don't know what to expect. They won't have a game plan.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you put on the internet, it builds your profile.
But if you're going to be taking your... if you're taking your team to the next level, then it's going to have to get out there somehow.
It will, yeah, eventually. Yeah. If the show gets bigger, like our next show, we're looking to do live streaming. And I think that's the way forward now. So like we're looking at like big promotions like Glory, Your Cow... and UFC, who we trying to follow their footsteps and see what they're doing right and why they're getting big, and you know, some of them are doing live streaming, so we're going to move that way forward anyway.
Yeah, because I think that's you know, personally a great way to get a bit more exposure and also to get the fans and stuff, is to have, you know, some of your fight, maybe not the whole fight, but maybe a highlight reel.
Yeah, we've got lots of that anyway.
But I mean, for 2014, keeping it current, keeping it relevant.
Yeah, we got Q. Q Nguyen. Is it Nguyen or Nguyen?
Or Nugget.
Mr.
Q. He does all our videos, so he's doing a great job.
Yeah, I'll actually chuck up some of Q's videos underneath the podcast on the webpage.
Yeah.
Because...
well, he's been a strong... he's been helping off with a brand quite strongly, you know, with a strong partner, yeah, I could say. So anyone interested, get in touch.
Yeah, and... you know, if you are currently a fan or one of the fighters of Team Chu, you will have noticed, you know, Q's videos in the past year, and
I think it's been quite a big part actually, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
definitely
helping our branding go up and make it look professional.
So that all shows are copying Q's videos.
Yeah, so Matty, your opponent pulled out, and then the kind of all your training kind of like is for nothing at that point.
Yeah.
What was the next plan then?
Not really. It's happened to me a few times, so kind of used to it as well. But at the same time, it's not a big loss, because every time you train for a fight, you get better anyway. So
yeah,
and you know what to do improve next time for your next training. So it didn't bother me a bit, but
must still. Be anticlimax.
But the guy was like.
The worst thing is just because it was on a weigh-in day. It went like a week before on the day. So.
I think the worst thing was not hitting your debt, though. I think the worst thing was that he didn't even try. He didn't show you the respect that you deserve as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
The best way to see it is like one of my old coaches always said to me, every 6 to 8 weeks fighting camp is like 1 year's worth of training for a normal person.
Yeah,
and then you just know your body inside that. You're not, and your training gets better and better. Like even for this fight training now, it's even better. Big time.
So when is your next fight? That's the
NCC.
One.
Next NCC,
7 weeks time.
Yeah, so what is your... The last time we spoke, your current ranking was...
Number one in UK.
So you've maintained that since we last spoke?
Yeah.
And then...
By the opponent pulling up, you won the... You conceded the belt to you, didn't you?
The world title belt, so this time I'm going to
defend it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So I guess the question that I want to know is, and what's the next step to get to, like, for example, a Glory or something where you guys are getting invited to the big shows, you know, such as the Glory.
Fighting on just bigger shows.
Just get yourself out there. It's all down to management as well.
Wasn't David invited to a big event? Like the 8-man tournament, was that a big one? Is that considered big?
Yeah, it's big names on it.
Biggish
names, but unfortunately Dave had to pull out because of injuries.
It's big names, but not big shows.
Yeah, it's not a big show, but it's a big names on it.
So I guess, so how far is the gap then between...
Not far.
Between what?
A few of us guys have formed really big shows.
Sam from Glory.
But the next, next
Glory is different though. For Muay Thai, Glory is different. It's different rules. It's
K1.
It's K1 rules, isn't it? And all we specialise in Muay Thai. So for the biggest shows out there right now is probably Your Cow.
Thai
Fight.
Your Cow, Thai Fight Extreme. Main Event's quite big as well now in the UK.
That's it, really, isn't it?
There's another one as well.
Similar
to Thai
Fight. So you mentioned K1.
K1 is different rules. So for the viewers who don't know the difference, is Muay Thai, we have elbows, clinching, knees. And whereas K1, they're taking, you can say, taking most of the rules out, and you can just punch and kick and low kick. So they're trying to make it like non-stop action and take away the grappling. Mm-hmm. But personally, I think people don't enjoy the clinching because people don't understand. Mm-hmm. And it's like anything, if you don't understand it, you won't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's up to us as promoters and Muay Thai promoters to kind of promote to people and educate them on the techniques.
Yeah.
For example, if we get like commentators come in and say, okay, this is, he's putting his hand position there because of this,
mm-hmm.
he's turning and then that's scoring more, or, you know, mm-hmm. educating the fan, just like in MMA. Sometimes I watched UFC when they had like instructional how to do an armbar,
mm-hmm.
how to get into a mount, and you know, mm-hmm. just so the crowd can understand what's going on the floor.
Well, they're actually saying that in Japan, when they do like jiu-jitsu shows and stuff, the crowd's really silent, and it's the reason why is that they appreciate all the different moves. Once they get on the ground, they can see when someone's passing guard, or when they're setting up the kimura, or they're setting up the rear naked choke.
That's like Thai boxing as well, when the crowd's really quiet. And you can tell they're concentrating on the
fight. Exactly. But clinching, people underestimate clinching. They think clinch is just grabbing someone and kneeing someone. Mm-hmm. But it's actually one of the hardest things to learn in Muay Thai. And some of our members and our students can't even get the hold of.
Yeah.
Of some of the moves.
Yeah, yeah.
For example, we've got Michael Family. He's only just recently, after
just picked 10 years.
How long? 10 years. He's just picked up the clinch recently now. Yeah.
It's like a different sport.
Yeah.
It's like doing
some games. Some games. Some
It's like doing boxing and jiu-jitsu. It's totally different.
It's a good example of a show which had a similar instance. UFC started at UFC 1. The crowd would actually boo when the fighters would get on the ground. Mm. When one of the fighters would get someone into a chokehold, they thought he was actually losing, and they didn't understand.
Yeah.
But what they did was they used the commentators and started using that. And now, as you can see,
mm-hmm.
the fans understand what's happening. Yeah,
that's a very good point. That's a very good point right now. Like I said, even when I understand a little bit of MMA now. But if you don't understand MMA, like the groundwork, it's just going to look boring. It's just going to look like two people hugging each other on the ground. And nowadays in Muay Thai, people, when they clinch, that's what it looks like to them. There's hugging and a few knees to the side. But there's so many technical aspects that people can learn and the crowd can learn. And the more they understand the point scoring, the more you enjoy it. Just like in Thailand, you know, you go to a stadium called Lumpini, the atmosphere is just incredible. Like,
yeah.
Everyone knows, the people are putting money down, so they know what scores, what doesn't, so they enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Buzzing atmosphere.
It's a buzzing atmosphere.
Yeah. Electric. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the cool things, you know, us as a group, we've been to Thailand quite a few times now, and we've, every time we go, we're always going to go watch a Muay Thai fight.
Yeah.
Or somewhere, and you know, when you climb on those kind of dodgy, like, seats and stairs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, there's always people going around. Yeah, there's these guys going around betting money and doing all their kind of dodgy dealings on the side. And, you know, having Bobby there. And, you know, Bobby doing his, like, you know, half English, half Thai accent.
I understand better English, man.
But the thing is, in Thailand, the crowd knows who's going to win and who loses, but how many times in England you get, oh, that guy's been robbed, or this, it's not fair, this and that. Because they don't understand, they just think, you know, they just look at who looks busy or whatever.
Yeah.
The thing is, even now, even when I watch it, I still find it quite hard to.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard sport.
Especially when it's Thai guys fight, you don't know who you won. I could go to Lumpini Stadium or whatever, a stadium in Thailand, and you still wouldn't know who won.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the things the listeners have to understand is that we're not dissing them. It's just that it's a hard thing to understand.
Yeah, it's hard to understand.
We're not dissing them.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would judge it as they would a boxing match.
Yeah.
You know, you know what you can clearly see, but...
Yeah. But that's why it's my shows now, I'm trying to get, like, you know, sometimes we do, like, a scoring education thing before a show.
Mm.
You know, and we have it in a program card where what scores, what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that way the fan know what to look for.
Right? Yeah.
It's much more enjoyable when you understand it.
Because it wouldn't be a fight anymore, it would be a sport.
Exactly, yeah.
You're going to do that for the next show?
Yeah, definitely.
So this MTC?
Are you going to put on a, what do you call it?
Maybe do a video, a screen.
No, we talked about that before.
Because Glory did that as well. Actually, Glory...
they had a good video as well.
They had a very good video in the show.
Mm-hmm. I think we should do that.
With a mini video of what scores and what doesn't.
I think we should do that. It'd be better than inviting them on the programme. Yeah, because on the programme, you just look at who wants to fight.
But as watching a video, it might be too much information to take in.
No, they keep it simple. They kept it simple.
You just watch it. It's easier to watch and read. Be better.
Yeah, that's something we could look into in the future.
Speaking of Glory, I heard a podcast on the, it was a London Real podcast, and they had this guy on who worked, he's been the last couple of years with Glory. His name is Ivan Finetti, and I think he's one of the guys that run the business stuff for Glory. But he gave like a little introduction to how Glory came about. And he said that at the time K1 was dying, and it was a shame because, you know, it was a great sport that was kind of doing really well in the Netherlands and France and Italy, and it started to die down. And basically that's how they got into the Muay Thai scene. They were buying the contracts. Glory was buying all the contracts from the fighters from the K1. And, you know, there was a lot of problems in K1. Fighters weren't getting paid, there was bad management, and they weren't getting along with their managers. So he's on this interview, and I wanted to play a couple of minutes of this of his speech, because some of the points that he raises here, I feel that the Glory resembles quite a lot Team Chu. You know, they're a new Muay Thai company, they've been around for 2 years, but he gives some good advice as to what's helped them to be successful in these past 2 years. All right, so check this out. Here we go.
The kind of guy that will drive entertainment. You know, it's sport business, it's sport entertainment business.
So this is Ivan
and
Finetti,
he knows how to entertain the crowd. Inside the ring, of course, and outside the ring.
Which is just as important these days.
This is a major, major point. I mean, it's 2014, right? We have social media. We have the ability to do a podcast with your own iPhone and send it out to people. He gets this. You know, some of the American fighters get this even more than anybody else because it's the show business world.
I think the UFC was giving Twitter bonuses at one point. They might still do it. Every month someone gets the 5 or 10 grand Twitter bonus. And when they walk out, it has their Twitter handles on that. I mean, Dana was a big early adopter of that.
Yeah, Dana was sensational. I heard...
Yeah, so just one thing there that what Glory would do is that every month they would give a $5,000 bonus to any of their fighter that sent the most tweets out.
Mm.
And it was an incentive that they didn't think would like take off a lot, but all of a sudden because of that they got like 500,000 extra fans just because they were encouraging all their fighters.
Mm.
And it's something easy that you guys can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but listen to what else he says.
Hold on. The story that he the first time he did an event and he was on Twitter, he actually went off and personally thanked every single fan that tweeted during the event. I don't know if it's true, but I can tell you what, you know, we've done the same thing. Every time a fan tweets at us or post a comment on our Facebook page, and now we have more than 500,000 fans on Facebook, we try to, you know, thank each and every one of them every single time. Because, you know, building the relationship between the brand and the fan is not an easy task unless you go through the fighters. The fighters are really what we are all about. Glory is going to grow if the fighters brand in itself grow. And it's a symbiotic relationship. So we talk to them a lot. We give them pointers as to, you know, how to handle themselves in the dark period between the fight and the next fight. Fighters fight maybe twice, 10 times a year.
Right.
But they need to remain relevant, especially for us as a new brand. You know, we help them and we interact with them a lot. We are giving small bonuses for social media interaction.
Okay.
And, you know, they get it. And yeah. I have to admit, the American kickboxers, who may not be as well known internationally as some of maybe the Dutch guys, they are really leading the edge in terms of promoting who they are, making themselves relevant. And the good thing is now the tide raises, you know, itself also in Europe, where finally some of the European guys are really getting that sense of we have to become relevant. If a fan doesn't follow me on Facebook, if a fan doesn't like my page doesn't follow me on Twitter, or doesn't like my page on Facebook, is not going to watch me fight, is not going to buy my pay-per-view when I become relevant, is not going to be my fan. And I think the American guys get this perfectly.
Yeah, you hear Dana White.
Yeah, so something interesting that he said there is that, you know, especially with a new brand and you're going to try and take off, the way that you're going to be doing that is mainly for your fighters.
That's a good point.
Man, you better put your Facebook, just on Facebook, you ain't going to get
that. And they said that, you know.
You're listening. It's like, you're listening.
No, but a fighter fights, like he says, you know, 3 or 4 times a year. But what are you doing in between them?
True.
Apart from training, everyone knows you train.
Yeah.
But
like,
what are you doing to keep in touch with your fans, to promote yourself? What videos are you putting up so that when it comes to fight, you're not just simply sending out a Facebook, "Hey guys, I'm fighting in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Buy my ticket," because we're going to expect that from you all the time. But
the gym.
Yeah, but what else are you doing in between that? All of you, all your fighters, to do that so that when it comes, it's a much a bigger event now. So you'll get, you know,
it's
a
like
lot more.
Fans know the character. The fighters.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like WWE, like the fans kind of.
Yeah. WWE and WWF, it's not even about the fight, it's about the whole story, isn't it?
Yeah, the story.
The story ain't even the big thing.
Yeah, it's characters, yeah. Yeah. That's why, like, it's good to do interviews with each fighter and stuff as well, even though you're not even comfortable.
I guess it's a way for the viewer to actually get involved with the fight scene as well.
Yeah.
Get to know you as well, maybe, a bit.
Uh-huh.
For them to be able to play.
But how Mike likes to say, love, as the love.
Yeah.
The interactivity, the whole interactivity of the thing,
yeah,
as well.
Okay.
If a fan feels that he or she is able to interact further with the fighter, he or she might feel more further appreciated and involved,
yeah,
in such.
Well, just for example, like now we started following Greg Warden's fighter, who he lost to. Now I want to watch him because I see him beat Greg Warden. I've gone into it. Actually, you look at YouTube, but whereas before I would never watch this guy.
Mm.
But now he's big
that's what
I'm saying.
Yeah.
In a way, it's kind of good to have your fights up.
But that's exactly why I'm saying, like, that's how you develop a relationship with someone.
It's good and bad, but.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you watch a good fight, you go back home and you. Like,
yeah.
I never heard of Mike Jim properly until I heard, went to a show on Saturday and I saw him fight. And I started checking up on Mike's gym.
Yeah.
On YouTube, and imagine he didn't have any clips on video on YouTube and that, then.
Yeah.
You won't have a chance to become a fan of the thing.
Especially on Facebook. How are you going to become a fan?
I just feel that, yeah, fine, if you put your video up, someone might learn your technique, but once you get to a certain level,
yeah,
it's all about, you know, after the first round, what your coach tells
I,
you, how,
I,
who,
I never,
who can
I
adapt the most. Yeah.
I listen to my coach, what he says is good at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I want to watch it,
because
I don't think it's going to benefit me as well, even though I know what to expect, but it's not going to benefit me, I don't think.
Well, I was watching, you know, a lot of the TUFs, the Ultimate Fighters, and they have, you know, they have to fight a couple of times to make it to the finale.
Yeah.
But they say that one of the things that they spend like about a fifth of their time on is the mental training.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like they have a whole team that they go speak to them to try and, because,
yeah,
you know, you can lose a fight before you go into the ring.
Even though my fights get cancelled, I think I learn a lot because mentally. And
you've been building up for it,
you've passed it, and past 7 weeks after, you just want to fight, so you're not really bothered.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Hard training because you're sick of it.
Sick
of it. You
just want to fight.
Yeah.
So when you train hard and you're sick of it.
That's why it's not. That's why we're brought guys when their fights are cancelled.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be, innit? It's big step.
Yeah. Well, some people say that the training bit is the hard bit and the fight is the enjoyable bit.
Train hard,
yeah,
fight easy.
Yeah.
What Muhammad Ali
said. I know a lot of guys in pro fights, I don't think they look at their fighters either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even if you ask Mayweather, he don't even look at his fighters.
Yeah.
Well, one of the problems with
that
is that
he don't look at his fighters.
Once you start to analyze your opponent, It's like even doing that in badminton. It's like the minute I see someone with a good smash, it puts my game down immediately because I'm like, shit, I'm starting to concentrate on how good their game is opposed to how good my game is, you know.
Is that self-doubt then?
Yeah, definitely.
It's making your self-doubt like 10 times worse.
Yeah. But the more fights you lot have, like that, you kind of manage that piece a little bit better every time.
Yeah, but it's always be scary.
Always scary, but you just get more confident. Like recently, only like the last fight, I found my legs. Like before, I used to get jelly legs.
Well, I become heavy as well.
Yeah, like I can't kick, and then Dave, someone would be warming up Dave, and I'd be like, look, I can't do it. Like, you know, my legs would be so scared. But then,
you know, yeah, now, you know that time when you're trying to warm up. That time you're trying to warm up, and you just.
Not that empty scene, the last one. You know that scene, the private ride, when they're about to go on war, and this bullet's like going down, that's like a changing room, it's the same thing, isn't it, like going to war, but now I understand exactly that going to war, in a way you are going to war, but now I don't see that, I see it as just, you know, it's just a fight and it's a sport as well, like scoring, it's not the end of the world, before I used to think I'm not going to see my family.
No, but there is some people that have that fight mentality where it's like, I'm prepared to die today.
They're the scariest guys to fight. Yeah, it is scary going in the ring because you don't know what's going to happen, but you, as long as you train hard for it, you'd be confident.
But we were saying that today, that even though if a fight seems easy, but it says that it's 10 times harder because they've been training for you.
Yeah, so the guy's fit, but then people have died in the ring. No, not died, but they had like brain damage. Australian guy, we're laughing about it. Australian guy who died. See, it is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. It's dangerous. Yeah.
No, any head trauma is dangerous. I mean,
yeah,
that's
the head trauma.
Yeah, you can't deny that. And just like the repetitiveness of getting like beat in the head. You know, it's whether you like it or not, that will have some kind of consequences.
Yeah, that's why in sparring now, I try to spar light because. Yeah. You spar every time hard in the training, it's not good for your head.
Yeah.
So I just try to take it down. It's like having a real fight after you're dizzy.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to just think long term sometimes in training, try to train smart.
Yeah.
Not train hard every day, but consistent, but light, hard. Mm-hmm. You know, before. Yeah, something like that.
Just train smart. Training harder doesn't mean that you're gonna fight.
Do you see David Trainer's blog today? He said that. Everyone expects it. Whoever starts Muay Thai always expects to train hard every day. But his blog said today, you have to train light and then hard. And have light, when you have light days, you learn 10 times more than you do hard days. Everyone who does Muay Thai thinks I have to train 100%. Every day, but no one could do that 100% every day. And then you do 100% every day, you won't learn nothing, can it?
But you burn out. Your performance actually decreases.
Yeah.
You actually get slower and less strength.
And I think you get more obsessive again, trying to get stronger.
Is that a fact? Is that scientific fact?
Yeah, getting stronger and faster is all about not when you're at the gym, it's about when you recover. How much recovery you get, how your diet is, you know. But when you're at the gym, you only actually stimulate your muscles to get stronger.
Yeah.
You don't actually get stronger, you stimulate your muscles.
Yeah.
So when you actually eat and sleep, that's when you recover and get stronger.
Rest is important.
Very important.
Because I remember like when we used to do our group gym workout sessions together, we would be there like for like 2 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd be like do that, have a little chat, and then go and... And then, you know, I remember, like, it stuck out for me because you said that, you know, all you needed was, like, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You just go in, you know, you've got your regime, you do your 40 minutes, and that's better than, like, doing that 2 hours.
You ask any fighter, because it's probably overwhelming, but any fighter, there's been one point when they've fought in the ring. First round, they finish, and there's nothing left. That's happened to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that's why...
It's peaking at the right time as well.
Peaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's when knowing your body when to peak. So some people can peak too early, like 3 weeks before the fight, they're getting crazy. And when they get to the fight, they're just drained and have no energy.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've been watching a lot of UFC and a couple of Muay Thai fights as well. But when you see someone that gives it all in the first round and then you hear the commentator say, oh, you know, now the second, third round.
You can judge a lot. in the fight. When someone goes really good first round, you know they're going to lose. I think most times they're going to lose, I reckon.
Yeah.
I remember we were talking about this for the training for Dave one day, how he was training for his main event at the 8-man tournament, how he thought that training has to constantly be a build-up. Has to be better and better and better, and he feel the best right before his match, and that's when he performs his best.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's
Joel, speak a bit closer, because you're so far down, it's like...
I think that's why Dave also decided to pull out, because he didn't feel like he was building up the necessary build-up. He felt he was going to be ready, but not at his peak performance, at which he was to show his fans and himself and the team as well.
What was this? What was this?
Right.
It was meant to be this Saturday.
Yeah.
This Saturday? Already?
The 8-man tournament's a tricky thing because, I mean, that's how Glory are making their name. They said, you know, one way to get a good brand is to, like, differentiate yourself, make your brand different, and that's how they're doing it. They're doing these, they have, like, if they only have a 2-hour slot on TV, they'll do a 4-man tournament, and if they get the pay-per-view 3-hour session, then they'll do an 8-man tournament.
I think the best example for brand differentiation would be Apple. Apple always does everything unique, from its way, from the way you charge your phone to even things like how you transfer content to your phone, things like that. Basically, Apple prides himself on being different and minimalistic at the end, basically being unique, and that's what we should try to do, and we are doing as well.
Yeah, so
you're having right. Apple's actually one of the best brands out there.
Yeah, really market themselves.
So what do you guys do that's different, or you know, what is the aim?
Everybody performs great. And we see a C-class fighter, they perform like a B-class fighter. B-class performs like an A-class fighter.
Mm. We always start on time as well.
And then the shows are good. Phil's promotion videos, the weigh-in, Phil's made the weigh-ins like...
Mm.
Everyone feels like a celebrity when they go to the weigh-ins. And you even got people coming to watch the weigh-ins now. Members want to excited to watch the weigh-ins.
Yeah.
So that's different. Like Phil's shows as well, Super MTC.
But I think we have that... Even though everyone's got a different like flair, we have that sort of similar tactic.
Mm-hmm.
The way we fight is quite similar.
Yeah.
Like, you can watch them and you can tell
that's from Team Chew.
You can tell.
Yeah. Everything's clean, everything's technical, everything's...
Yeah.
Actually, in saying that, when I took my first personal training session with Philip, the first thing he told me is that in Team Chew, we don't teach Muay Thai, we don't teach technique, we teach style.
Mm.
In how Team 2 makes itself, individualises itself from other teams is that it teaches grace, it teaches style, it teaches...
Yeah. Everyone's got a different style. Everyone could be like aggressive fighter, defensive.
I think,
At the bottom line, everyone has the same style. Mm. Everyone.
Yeah. I think the best example would be David, really. Yeah.
Yeah, you could be aggressive, defensive, you could be speed, but you still...
Do you want to say that again?
I think the best example of this would be all the fighters in Team 2 would be like David, Ryan, Matthew, all these other... Matthew and all these other fighters. David prides himself on... Well, as a fan myself, I think that David fights very gracefully. And Matthew himself, he has this really strong killer instinct as well. And perhaps the best example would be Michael Pham. Everyone's afraid of the big bad wolf.
The beast.
The funny thing is, actually, you know, I was talking to a couple of people in my class today, and you know what they chat about every time in the sauna?
What
trainers would beat who? Guess who you think won?
Yeah. Michael.
Michael.
Okay.
Then me.
Yeah.
No one expected Phil. Why? Because he doesn't train. That was so shocked. That's when we're talking about today. Everyone's shocked saying, no, Phil beats everyone. Really? I thought you smashed Phil. You and Michael smashed Phil. Yeah, everyone said, you and Michael are the top fighters, only because we'll look at you, but only because Michael is higher than you because he's bigger than you, that's it.
Mm.
But they thought it was Michael first, then me, and
Dave
fights on the back foot sometimes, but and then they wouldn't think Phil.
I think Richard...
And they talk about it in the sauna all the time.
Yeah,
shocking. You know, guys, like, we always think we're training to win.
Mm.
And they said, only you, because you're second, because only because you're small. But they thought David, no, Michael, because he's the biggest.
Yeah.
And he's got that name.
He's got those eyes as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Beast.
the black eyes.
Yeah, green machine.
Well, I'm still learning anyways.
Even with that, he thought I was the slowest one. Not knowing that I'm the fastest.
I remember members also talking about Richard Lee and how they were surprised at how he performed in the show as well. Mm. How well he performed.
What show?
And bullshit.
In that one show.
Because, I mean, it's a podcast. You want to give spotlight to everyone here.
It's not about promoting, it's just talking.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Well, do you miss it then? Do you miss the combat?
Fine.
A little bit, but you know, when I was fighting, I think I'm better as a fighter now if I was to fight. Because, you know, from teaching, I've learned a lot from just training with these guys. You know, these guys around me is like my teacher as well. As I'm teaching them, I'm learning myself.
No, but before we would all go follow you to go and watch you fight, and it's, you know, the dynamics have changed now. But
yeah, it's
changed. Do you ever feel... Because we were speaking today and you said that you're starting to get a lot more fitter and you're starting to do a lot more
I enjoy training with the boys and a bit of banter in there.
Mm.
But being in the ring, I guess I think about it all the time, to be honest.
Mm.
I remember when I did an interview with you, you told me one of your biggest regrets was not fighting or continuing your fight.
Yeah, I think right now in my life, to be honest, is one of my biggest regrets that I haven't really fought.
It's not too late now.
Yeah,
but I have a feeling you traded that with your
teaching.
Exactly. If you had fought, you wouldn't have
no,
been a world
definitely attack. Not. I had a choice at one point. I thought, you know, because one time
when I was doing that at the same time,
I think Dave lost his second fight in Scala, and it just made, for me, it felt like I was responsible because I didn't put 100% into my guys, and I thought, that time I was having a fight soon, or I can't remember, near at that time. And I thought, you know, I need to choose now. Do I want to have the best team, or do I want to be the best fighter?
Mm.
And I just chose the path I, you know, actually enjoy, obviously, in the long term.
Yeah.
You know, seeing these guys do well.
And I think it suits your character, you know, the... being the big brother to everyone.
Yeah,
and just
because I'm the oldest as well, and, you know, I like to help people.
Yeah, so Dave, we were gonna let's touch a bit about your trip to Germany.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
couple of funny stories I know that took place, but yeah, why don't you tell us a bit about that?
From which part, the fight or?
I mean, I know you guys are quite technical. You enjoy talking about the fight, but I mean, as a normal listener, maybe, you know, as a fan of the show, just to understand, you know, a bit about, you know, what led up to the fight and...
Training-wise?
Yeah, and who went with you and etc. Yeah.
Okay, so we fought in Germany in, was it March? June or March? I can't remember. In Aachen.
Yeah.
For so a European title.
Mm-hmm.
67 kilos. And me, Q, and Phil went up there. Lonely. Felt like a lonely planet, to be honest. But first international fight. It was good. The best experience I've ever done.
And your ranking at that time?
Yeah, it's still number six, but I mean, like, I was going for a European title.
Yeah.
When you fight someone in Europe. Yeah. So I'm fighting someone, top boy in Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah, training went well. 6 weeks, peaked at the right time, was stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And just before that, I fought at Phil's Super MTC in Coco against Brian Long, who's top Irish boy, who was stronger than me, but I managed to outclass him. So I was even more confident for this fight. And when I got there, what I learned from the previous fights, it paid off because I even done everything I could, 10 out of 10, and end up
maybe better.
Much better,
yeah.
Much fitter, even with a minute break. It was minute break less, their rules was, usually you get a 2 minute break each round. I only got 1 minute, and it was a busy fight.
Yeah.
Didn't feel gassed at all. I was in top shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then, outclassed my opponent, and then end up getting robbed. The ISKA
president
said something like, this is not the case now, or something.
Mm.
I feel was arguing with him, saying, I thought you were scoring proper Muay Thai rules.
Mm.
You were just saying, this is not the case.
Yeah.
And we're just like, why are you changing the scorecards? Then they were like, oh, because he's in red corner. And they just basically just squashed my name out, changed it round.
Mm.
So it's like you can't say nothing in it after.
But are the rules really that different? That
if even if the rules were, there was nothing about the rules. Say, yeah. There was nothing about the rules. I clearly beat him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was not like a 50.
Even if we did a K1 rule,
even if it was any fight, it wasn't. It was like
there was a very clear.
A very clear win.
Yeah.
Well, we sent the video just to clear off a chest, but we knew anyway. But we sent the videos to all the top Muay Thai judges in the UK just to clarify that, well, we're going crazy or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of them scored Dave a clear win from, like, 50-46,
right.
You know. And that's nowhere near a draw.
I remember they were saying they offered a rematch as well, right?
They said they offer a rematch, but the rematch is not the same guy, so it doesn't make sense. They said, yeah, we'll rematch you, but we'll bring another guy.
No.
So we thought, that's not right. How could you rematch somebody for a European title?
Not the same person.
Yeah, with a different person. It doesn't make sense.
You might as well send a different person as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's some kind of corruption going on.
What did they say when you said that?
They didn't reply to me in the email, so, you know, we just...
Yeah,
left
on,
it, to
on the ISK website.
Maybe that might be good to do a rematch at the MCC show with the other guy.
No, they won't do it.
No, with the other guy.
Yeah, but you don't know who the other guy is. It doesn't make sense.
What's the point?
No, it doesn't make sense.
It's not worth bringing them.
It's not worth it. They can bring anybody.
Yeah.
Even by doing that, you're acknowledging that
they have power and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Accepting
that they win. Letting them win.
Yeah.
No, but if it's...
So the fighters that you get from abroad, do they contact you or we seek them out? Or?
Usually, I don't want to discuss too much politics on here, but usually the governing bodies, let's say we're going for a European title, they will bring somebody worthy from another country saying, all right, this guy is worthy for this European title, or this guy holds the European title, so you have to challenge him.
That sounds all right.
Yeah, so that's how it normally works.
Cool. All right, so I guess just to wrap things up again, if we want to find out more about this, you're saying, Joel, there's the Team Chu, and that's Team Chu spelled T-I-E-U. And if you type that into Twitter or Facebook, the page comes up anyway.
Twitter, Facebook, and we're on Team Chu, we're on Instagram, named as Team Chu Official as well.
Team Chu Official.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't follow. We have an imposter called Team Two as well, but that account isn't owned by us. So please follow the official Instagram, Team Two Official.
Okay.
And if you have any questions, just message us on Facebook.
We've got on our website as well.
Yeah.
TeamChu.com.
TeamChu.com. And so just one more time, the next big show where practically everyone here is fighting.
Yeah.
October 19th.
Mm-hmm. We're back at the Cold Coals again. In Camden.
Yep.
If you want tickets to that, you can go for Ticket Web, or you can contact us on our email, teamshoe@hotmail.co.uk.
Yep. And what I've started to do now with each podcast, I create a web page where I put some of the other videos, some of the other links.
Yeah.
So it'll be easy, purchase tickets here, click there, and they can they can get everything from there. I think it's good that, every now and then we'll come... give some of your fans just a bit of an update as to what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
How your commentary on fights, etc., and just give them a better insight into the lives that you guys lead.
Yeah, I think that each MPC is getting bigger and better, and then I think the next one's gonna easily be our next one.
Alright then, well, on that night, guys, thanks very much. Hi. Some of the smartest dummies can't read the language of Egyptian mummies on a flag or a moon, and can't find food for the starving tummies. Pay no mind to the youths, cause it's not like the future depends on it. We'll save the animals in the zoo, cause the chimpanzee them a make big money. This is how the media pillages, on TV the picture is savages and villages, and the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids, stereotyping the image of the images, and this is what the image is. You buy a khaki pants and all of a sudden you a say a Indiana Jones, and I tip all the gold and tip all the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzi I've ever seen and I ever known, with the worst on this place that the world can see, and that's all that will ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like it'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast, but the way them a go flee when the monster is fully grown. Salamonic lineage where them still can't defeat and them coulda never clone. A spiritual DNA that prints in my soul and I will forever own, Lord.
Are we born knowing all? We growing wiser? Are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was flat, if you went too far, you would fall off. Now the earth is round, if the shape change again, everybody would have start love. The average man can't prove up most of the things that he chooses to speak of. And still run research and find out the root of the truth that you seek of. Scholars teach in universities and claim that they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose start running. And the rich get stitched up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with a wet mud. Can you read signs? Can you read stars? Can you make peace? Can you fight war? Can you milk cows? Even though you drive cars, can you survive against all odds now? Who wrote the Bible? Who wrote the Quran? And was it a lightning storm that gave birth to the earth and then dinosaurs were born? Who made up words? Who made up numbers? And what kind of spell is mankind under? Everything on the planet we preserve and can it. Microwave it and try it, no matter what, we'll survive it. What's you? What's man? What's human? Anything along the land we consuming. Eating, deleting, ruin. Trying to get paper. Gotta have land, gotta have acres. So I can sit back like Jack Nicholson, watch play the game like the Lakers. In a world full of 52 fakers, gypsy seances, mystical prayers. You superstitious, throw salt over your shoulders, make a wish for the day, cuz like somebody got a dollar me. Sticking needles in my artery, but I can't feel it. Sometimes like part of me, but I got a real big spirit. A fearless. Don't you try to grab hold of my soul. It's like a military soldier since 7 years old. I held real dead bodies in my arms, felt their body turn cold. Oh, why are we born in the first place if this is how we gotta go? Damn. Savali. Patience. Yeah.